Calling all conscious achievers who are seeking more community and connection, I've got an invitation for you. Join me at this year's Summit of Greatness, this September 7th through 9th in my hometown of Columbus, Ohio, to unleash your true greatness. This is the one time a year that I gather the greatness community together in person for a powerful, transformative weekend. People come from all over the world, and you can expect to hear from inspiring speakers like Inky Johnson, Jaspreet Singh, Vanessa Van Edwards, Jen Sincero, and many more. You'll also be able to dance your heart out to live music, get your body moving with group workouts, and connect with others at our evening socials. So if you're ready to learn, heal, and grow alongside other incredible individuals in the greatness community, then you can learn more at lewishouse.com/summit2023. Make sure to grab your ticket, invite your friends, and I'll see you there.
I don't think confidence has to be part of it. Belief is important, for sure. Believing more because it just helps you have the courage to try. And that's the most important thing if we're really getting down to the nitty gritty, is just having the courage to try despite the chance that you might fail.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is the Olympics like? Was that the dream for you growing up?
No. Well, it was a part of my dream. I had a little notebook when I was younger that was like, I'm going to be Olympic champion. I think it was I'm going to be the youngest Olympic gold medalist in history. And that actually did happen. But
15, 15, 16, how old?
I was 18. 18. I was the youngest slalom gold medalist.
Sure.
So there's an asterisk on that. But that was one thing I wrote like in a journal, but really mostly my goals had nothing to do with the Olympics. Like my goal was always, I want to be the best skier in the world. I always looked up to Bodie Miller as my big idol. And he was like, at the time, you know, he won the overall globe. He was winning individual races. He was like, and he was inspiring people. And one of my favorite movies of all time was his documentary Flying Downhill, which is like, I don't even know. I don't know if you can buy it somewhere now. I would literally want to go back and watch it again, but I'm not really sure where to find it because I had it on a DVD and I don't like have a way to play it anymore. But that was like my most inspiring. He really inspired me to truly want to be a ski racer.
Really?
He's like the reason I identified myself at 8 years old as a ski racer. And I just...
Did you watch him on TV or in the Olympics?
Yeah,
or where did you see him?
I watched him on TV. We would get these DVDs every year. It's called like World Cup Winning Runs. And it's, you know, it's produced by US Ski and Snowboard.
Sure.
And it's like the crazy ski fanatics, like whatever, like your how-to videos and things like that. But it was just a compilation of all the season's best winning runs. And my parents used to get those DVDs and I would watch them. And it was like all Bodie's runs and just... amazing. And then, you know, during the Olympics as well. I think maybe what helped me sort of steer away from having the big, big Olympic dream was actually seeing some of what he experienced through the Olympics. And
what was
he
that?
He had great, great successes. He got the medals and everything. And he also had like the terrible Olympics that like I wish I could have gotten into his mind and known what was going on for him at the time. If it was about pressure, if it was about this or that, or if he just didn't really care because he was the kind of athlete who's like, I don't care about the one medal. I want to experience whatever it is that feels fulfilling in that moment. And it might not be winning the Olympic medal. It might be like just experiencing the Olympic like scene in a different way. And people always have an opinion and judge it and get right into it. And I saw that as a child, and it was like, I don't want to ever have to deal with something like that. Like, do your thing. Why do people have to have an opinion about it?
Right.
And the opinion itself is like adds pressure, and that makes it harder. I feel like that sort of watching him go through the successes he had and the challenges that he faced gave me some insight into like my own philosophy and what I find important in skiing, which is it's literally just about like it's kind of so boring, but it's just about the turn and making really good turns.
Interesting.
So it's like it's when like you talk about the process and stuff, and I know that gets, I feel like in sports people really, really want to hear about like your goals, that you want to be the greatest of all time, like the Michael Jordan story, like the I know you're going to be NBA champion, like you're going to do this, you're going to be the greatest, and all of the hype and the pressure is built up, and then he does it and it's like greater than. And I've always been like, I don't think I'm going to do any of this. I really just want to be a very good skier and ski well and ski fast, and maybe someday I can kind of be the best in the world, and if I can do that, maybe I'll hold on to it. And now it's been like 12 years of racing World Cup where I've been more or less at the top level, and it's still like I'm still in disbelief, but I always still go back to the days watching like my greatest idols, like Bodie Miller and Jonica Kosalich and Anya Pearson and all of these athletes that I looked up to. And I don't know, it's just like you see the struggle that they have and you see it from an outsider's perspective. And then now having gone through a lot of that and seeing it from the insider's perspective, we all feel it and experience it differently. But
feel what? The pressure?
The pressure or the failure or the success, whatever it is, like everybody's inspired by something different. So there's some athletes out there who literally can win races just because they just want to win it. Like just thinking, I want to win this race gives them the right mindset and the right intensity that they win it. And when I think I want to win, I never win.
Really?
Never, ever. If I'm thinking
about...
But
you rarely lose.
Yeah. If I'm thinking about winning, I will not win the race.
Come on.
It's happened. It's almost like 100% of the time.
So what do you need to think about?
I have to think about like the intensity of my skiing, or like I have to think about racing the course versus winning. It always has to be like what's happening between the start and the finish line, not what's going to happen after the finish.
Wow.
And that's... I don't know. I feel like it's a little bit corny, but
You got to focus on the next turn.
Yeah, the next turn. Like the process of getting to the finish is what allows you to win the race. And that's where my mindset has to be.
What do you struggle with managing more? Overcoming failure or having all the success?
Oh, I mean, I feel like I've gone through phases. I mean, I'm only 28, but I have gone, like, I could sum my career up so far in different phases. In the beginning, it was almost like there wasn't pressure. I didn't really have, I had success pretty early, but it was always like, this is so surreal. I wonder if it's even real. It might be a dream.
Because you're the young one on the circuit.
Yeah, I'm young and people keep expecting it to not happen. I kept exceeding expectations and my expectations were so high. I didn't care about anybody else's. And then, that's like the first 3 to 4 years of my career. And then I started to, like, then I had my first season where I did struggle. And I struggled a little bit more, like, finding the fine tuning of my ski equipment and different things. And my first struggles with my coach at that time. And like when things weren't really clicking, I might be the luckiest ski racer of all time that things clicked for me earlier than they do for most other athletes. I feel like that's really important, is you have to click with the equipment you have. You have to click with the coaches you have. People have to be on the same page and the same mindset and the same goals. And for the first 3-4 years of my career, I had that. I almost didn't have to try. Like part of that was because my mom traveled with me as one of my coaches as well. And she like she fought battles for me. She helped to make it click, but and she still does. But that, like, there's so many of these different variables that have to go into place, fall into place, or I don't know, be forced into place, that goes beyond just making good turns. And then when that came down to my job, which was literally just making good turns, I could do it. And so then I started having success early on, and it was just like, people were like, this is not real. This can't keep happening. And then it did. And then it was like, everybody caught up, and the media and public and just everybody watching caught up to, it was this season. I actually got injured, but
what
I was
year is
out,
this?
It was 2015, 2014, 2015. Yeah, 2014, 2015 season. And I got injured like December 2014. And then I came back February 2015. So I was like out for a good chunk of the season, but I had an MCL strain and a tibial plateau fracture. And then a bone bruise, which was probably the thing that like ends up holding everybody back the longest. There's surprisingly little research on bone bruising. But anyway, that's a totally different topic. So when I came back to skiing, I kind of focused more on just slalom. But that season was insane because I started out the season in October, and the first two races of the season were these two slaloms in Aspen. And I reset the record for the largest margin of victory in a World Cup.
How many seconds?
It was over three seconds, which is like, I mean, we win races, lose races by literally 1/100th of a second. And that's typical time differences. 2/10, 3/10 is big. 5/10 is like insurmountable. And then if you're getting over that, like people dream of winning a race by maybe a second.
Wow.
And I won this race by 3 seconds. I was like, I don't know what just happened.
An injury.
That was before the injury.
Okay, I was gonna
say. So then it was the next race series that we went to where I got injured. And then when I came back in February, I kind of focused on just the slalom races for the rest of the season. I did some giant slalom races, but it was just like mostly focused on slalom. And I think my average, it was like, my average time margin of victory for the whole season was over 2 seconds. Pretty much every single race besides one, I won by over 2 seconds.
That's crazy.
And then the one race was my comeback race. It was 5/10 or something. And that season is like the worst thing that happened to me because it set everyone's expectations that I was now going to win every race by over 2 seconds for the rest of my career. So I came back the next season finish the season, you have your summer period training, blah, blah, blah. First race of the season was in Finland for 2015-16. And I won it by 7/10, 6/10 of a second.
Well, she's slowing down.
Yeah. Yes. That's what
she's
everyone was like.
Slow. I don't
Are
know.
You worried the competition's getting so much better? Are you getting worse? And it was this whole, it was a weird, weird thing where I'd never experienced a victory where people put such a negative spin on it. And that then set me into the next phase of my career, which was a lot of like performance anxiety.
Really?
And it all surrounded around like what media would say and what people around me would say. And not the closest people, but even then, like even those closest to me would be like, oh, it'd be so great if you could just like stomp on this race. Like, if you could win it by a second, two, so like we want to get back there. And I get it. I just was like,
you're doing the best you can do.
I'm doing the best I can. I don't think we're there. Like, I actually think the competition is much stronger. And what, like, that happened, that was a moment in time or a season in time. And I don't think we're going to be in a place where I win races by 2 seconds anymore. But that expectation that then lasted, it's like a four to five year delay, like took people 4 to 5 years to catch up to the expectations I set in the beginning of my career. And then it took them 4 to 5 years to figure out that that might not be the what's going to happen all the time. It was just weird. So there's this phase where I was puking at the start of every
race. Really?
Yeah. Oh, terrible.
Every race?
Almost every race.
Just because of anxiety,
because fear, of anxiety.
Was it more worried about what the people closest to you were going to say, what the media were going to say?
It was media. It was like fear of losing, more just fear of what disappointment comes when you don't exceed the expectations. I'd been really used to kind of exceeding people's expectations. And then it was like, I'm still winning, but just winning alone isn't good enough anymore. I actually have to win by more. And if I'm going to exceed people's expectations, now I need to make winning by 2 seconds, 3 seconds a regular thing.
That's a lot of pressure.
I mean, it is and it isn't. It's so much that it's like, it's not realistic. And I knew it at the time, but I didn't know how to explain that. And it just, like, it's taken me a long time to get to the point to this point now where I just realize that people will catch up. And I also realize, like, during that period of time, you know, after every race, we go through the mix zone and go through all the media. And I felt like the media was directing questions in a very negative way if I didn't win by a certain amount, or if I had a really like strong reaction one race, they were like, why is this one so much more important to you? And those are all fair questions. My mind would go there if I was them as well. But I would really answer, I would take their question so literally and answer to that. And now I realize people still do that. They kind of try to get into your mind and they ask a question, but it insinuates that you feel a certain way instead of just asking how you feel. Well, sometimes, there's nothing wrong with it. Honestly, it's just like, if you ask the same question over and over and you want to word it a different way. And sometimes a reporter might ask like, you know, is it really disappointing that you came in second this race? This was this season when it was the 85th. So there were two slalom races in a row in the Czech Republic, and I won the first one. That was my 85th victory. And then the second day, everybody was thinking this is going to be your 86th. And for everyone around me, it was a done deal. And I was not there. And
mentally, emotionally, you
mentally,
were just
emotionally, I was tired. It was really, really long stretch of races. I raced seven races in 10 days and with travel, like literally across Europe.
It's just as much emotionally draining as it is physically.
Yeah,
because you have to mentally and emotionally prepare for hours before every race.
Racing is probably more mentally and emotionally draining. Physically, you're prepared for really whatever it can get. But
you've been
then
training
they all,
so hard leading into it. Yeah.
And then they all just get intertwined. And then you're like, why don't my muscles work anymore? And sometimes all I need is just one recovery day. And then I'm literally back to it. But I just...
Back-to-back was tough.
Yeah. Those back-to-back races, this was the last race series before World Championships this season. And I was like on a low, just drained. But I was having a good time. I loved racing. I won the first run of the second race, and I went last in the second run. I was in the lead the whole way down, and I lost the lead in the last part of the course. And I lost the race by 0.07 of a second or something like that to Lena Dura, a competitor who is an amazing human. Like, she skied so well. She was on the podium for like some of my very, very first podiums of my career. And she struggled and then had injuries. She's come back. Like, she deserved it. And I didn't have any questions about that. But for sure, people were thinking this could have been 86. Like, this would have been the record matching performance. And you could have done it here at the scene of your very first World Cup race when you were 15 years old. Like, it would have been fateful. The whole thing. It was all of this, the puzzle piece. It was all fitting together.
Pressure,
and then it didn't happen.
Right.
And I was like, people were asking this. I was like, I am so excited for Lena. I mean, I get it. It's not 86. Okay. Whatever. But I'm so happy for her. And I'm so excited about my race yesterday. And I'm actually really happy about how I skied most of it today. And I'm looking forward to work. Like, I started to use this kind of positive reframing of the questions about how I really felt. And it was like wild how the mood around me shifted from being like walking on eggshells. Is she disappointed? What's going to happen? You know, is she going to cry? Is she going to throw a fit? I'm like, I'm good.
Right.
And everybody was like, oh, okay. We can celebrate the second place too. That's cool. And I just realized how much more control I have than I ever knew before of like the closest people around me and their moods. I can help them. Like I can help them feel okay. If I don't win a race, they feel like it's their fault because they didn't do the work they did to prepare me. But sometimes it's not on them. Sometimes it's just like the factors don't come together in the right way and the other athletes skied better. And like, it took a long time for me to realize that it's not just me disappointing them. It's also they're afraid of disappointing me. And it goes, the coaches want to do their best. They want to see me win because they care. Some people want to see me lose because they're sick of seeing me win. And that's like, there's this whole dynamic, this whole like culture in there. And you have to kind of figure out how to separate those things, I guess.
Wow. One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Speaking of coaching, where would you be without great coaching in your career and in your life?
Nowhere. My whole life is like, I've been really lucky with my coaches, starting off with my parents, my first coaches in my life. They both taught me how to ski. And like I said, my mom, she's been my coach since I learned how to ski. But she traveled with me my first year in the World Cup. She still travels with me now. And she is, like, people have a bit of a misunderstanding because it's like a frustrating thing for her and for me. People go up to her and be like, when are you going to stop following Michaela around? Like, what do you do all day when she's skiing? Like, she's on the hill. She's helping set the courses. She sets some of the courses herself. She videos. She's like pulling fence, setting fence. She's a ski coach. She's just employed by me, not the U.S. ski team.
Right.
So people like have a hard time wrapping their heads around it. And some of her friends even will be like, come on, like come hang out with me more. Michaela's fine. And they don't realize how much of an impact she has on my career and like my mental stability and just being able to exist in Europe for 6 or 7 months at a time without being home, without being like, I'm fairly familiar with most of Europe now, but you're still not home.
Right.
You know?
Right, right.
And that's something like trying to like inception people's minds so they get it. So they stop asking her those questions because she's like, there's nothing like everyone around you making you feel like you're completely inconsequential and someone is like in your daughter's career. And who is she to say that she's like important, but I'm the one who says it. And it's like, oh,
wow.
Anyway, so.
Sure.
So she's a very important coach.
So what's the biggest lesson your mom has taught you?
Okay, there's a lot. And this might not be the actually most important lesson, but pretty early on, she and my dad kind of set this philosophy that like things are worth doing. I don't know how to put this. It's more fun to do things if you can do them well. And there's a way to do them well so that it's fun. And it comes with like a methodical approach and studying and learning. And this could be with school. It could be like math is more fun when you understand it and it takes a little work to understand it, but then it's like doing a puzzle that's actually fun. Or soccer growing up with my brother. He's 2 years older, 2.5 years older than I am. And we both wanted to play soccer and try out for the local travel team in New Hampshire. And it was a really good team. And we needed to practice. And my mom helped us. She got the books and some DVDs, and we would study different drills and soccer moves, things we could learn, and the Maradona and all these fun tricks, and just learn how to juggle a soccer ball, the basics of that, learn how to dribble properly, learn how to then you practice working on speed, you practice running technique, all of those things. And it was a step-by-step fundamentals. And we worked on that in the summer, and then we'd go back to our team in the fall. And especially my brother's coach, he was like, okay, Taylor is the Cinderella story of soccer, because he had a growth spurt the year before. He grew a foot and a half.
Wow.
And he lost the ability to run. And my mom brought him back. She taught him how to run again. She got him coordination. She bought him a unicycle to practice balance and all of these different things, ways, because his whole goal was to get back on the team with his buddies. And he came back and he ended up being the fastest runner on the team. And his ball handling skills were light years improved from what they were. And his coach was like, this is unbelievable. I've never seen something like this happen when a kid grows a foot and a half. And it takes longer to get your coordination back than that. Well, and my mom's like, yeah, well, that's what happens when you work at it.
Sure.
But it was all fun stuff too. All summer long, Taylor and I would just play soccer together. And with skiing, it's the same. I mean, it's all you learn the different skills and the fundamentals, and tennis too. Tennis is something we love. And it's so much fun to do it when you're playing well. And it yes. actually stinks when you're not playing well. So that's kind of that's a little bit of a family philosophy. And my mom just happens to be the greatest teacher that I know. She just knows how to break down movements and explain it in a way that makes sense, that people can learn. Taylor and I have a joke that she will see somebody struggling on the ski hill, and someone we don't know, just someone public, just skiing. She'll see them struggling, can't make it down a trail, and she'll go over to them and help them. And it's like the 5-minute crash course in how to become a World Cup skier. And by the end of that literal 5 minutes getting down to the bottom of the trail, they're arcing turns and enjoying it. And we're like, this is literally the difference between people doing the sport and not doing the sport, because it's brutal if you can't make it down the hill. And it is so fun if you know how to carve some turns and you can get down. And that's the motto of life, kind of.
What did she teach you during that season of high pressure with the media, or not winning as fast, or losing every once in a while? What did she teach you about managing stress, anxiety, overwhelm, and that psychological pressure?
Well, she actually encouraged me to start talking to a sports psychologist. And she set me up with somebody that we knew, actually a family friend, but also a psychologist. And she... for a long time, I felt like I don't need a sports psychologist, because I am actually very mentally stable and
you're winning.
And I'm winning and I'm strong. And I've never felt pressure. Pressure wasn't something, I didn't really get nervous for the first bunch of years in my career. And
you were just having fun.
I was just having fun, even at the Olympics and the Sochi Olympics, as standing at the start for the gold medal run. I was not nervous. Part of that, I was pretty sick, so it might have been a little bit distraction, but I was just pretty, not even confident, just at peace.
Really?
Yeah. And then I got into a phase where I got really nervous. I didn't know how to handle it. And my mom, she'd help me focus on things that were in my control. She'd help me focus on skiing, the technical aspects, and just things that I could control.
As opposed to media or conversations or other athletes or
just the random blips and thoughts that you get in your head. throughout a race day. You know, race day is, it's wild actually in ski racing, especially. It's a 9 to 10 hour day from the time you get out of bed to the time you get back to your hotel room after the race is over. And during that period of time, you have 2 minute long intervals that are actually important. And the rest of it, in 10 hours, the rest of it is sort of inconsequential, but also very important. But those 2 minutes, you need to be on and good. And it's like, sometimes you're like, how do I manage this? And your mind goes everywhere.
How do you prepare for this?
How do you prepare for it? How do you get through it? You literally, your brain is like, the thoughts that run through my head on a race day, it's like, I don't know how to ski this. Well, I don't know the combination in a slalom course, like this flush, or in a downhill. Oh my gosh, downhill is crazy. My mind goes totally wild because you're going like something between 60 to 80 at any given moment, and then you're going off these jumps, and some of them carry pretty far. Like women's races are typically around 20 to 40 meters, but there are some jumps where like I've gone 50, 55 meters. And ever since I was little, I had a kind of scary accident going off of a jump. And ever since then, I have like recurring images of myself falling off of a jump, like crashing backwards, hitting my head, helmet flies off, like my limbs are flinging around. And that is in a downhill without fail. When I see a jump, I'm like, I know that's not going to happen because I know what the technique needs to be. I'm solid in the air, but I have to like breathe and like focus myself. And I'll literally be in the course, racing it, skiing up to the jump, imagining myself messing it up.
Really?
Until the moment I go off and I'm like, nah, now or never. Like, you better do it right. Yeah.
What has the sports psychologist taught you about how to not fully eliminate the memory of pain from the past of falling or potentially falling or whatever it might be, but how to know that's happened before so you're not reckless, but also be at peace knowing you've mastered skills to be prepared for this moment?
Yeah. Well, now I've worked with, since that first season where I started working with a sports psychologist, I've now worked with several different psychologists, couple different sports psychologists, and now actually just like a clinical overall psychologist. And
how helpful has that been?
It's been huge. And a lot of it was like learning things about myself that almost maybe got hidden over the years. Maybe I started to shift my focus from the things that were important to me to the things that seemed important to everyone else. And just finding a balance, because both, actually, I feel like both things are important. A lot of times we talk this day and age about self-care, self-love, and like just placing emphasis on what's important to you. But if there's people around you that you love, it's okay if their opinions matter to you as well. It's just like find the balance between what seems like it should be a priority. And you should prioritize yourself, but that doesn't mean that you discount what everyone else is saying. It's just like, take it all with a grain of salt, do your own personal weighing situation and come out with like, come to your conclusion based off what you think is most important. But I didn't necessarily have the balance at that time. So with my first sports psychologist, we worked on finding a balance of what's like important to me versus what's important to the media, or how, like, I started doing some media prep questions. Like, we would figure out what people might say that would trigger me and give me that. It's not just puking. It's feeling like you're choking. That's what it is. It like triggers, not that anyone wants to know this, but it triggers a gag reflex. But it literally feels like the collar of your shirt is too tight. And you have this pressure point right here, like your food stuck in your throat. And that just, like, that triggers it.
Will make you throw up.
Yeah. And
you were trying to figure out what's causing that choking.
I'm like, why do I feel like something's closing in on my throat right now? Because there's literally, like, if you see me in the start, it still happens sometimes, but it doesn't scare me anymore. Like if I pull down my race suit, sometimes it feels like it's right there in my throat. And I'll take my fingers and I'll just pull down my race suit like this. And that's normally a sign that I'm feeling nervous. But I don't mind it. It doesn't necessarily trigger like me to go off on the side and like puke or whatever. I'm just like, oh, I need a little space in my throat. And I'm comfortable in that space now. But it took me like multiple psychologists to get to the level, like the last one I worked with, actually heading into the most recent Olympics, we were talking a lot about being comfortable or getting comfortable being uncomfortable. And you're likely to be uncomfortable when you don't know what the outcome of something is going to be.
Right.
And
you're not in control.
You're not in control and you want to be in control. And that was a really, like, that's how I always used to. I didn't care what the outcome was. I really cared how I got there and then would figure it out. Like when I cross the finish line, then we'll see if it was good enough to win or not. And
why do you care more now than you did then?
I actually think I've sort of come full circle a little bit. Now it's almost like when I was first starting out. And some of that probably has to do with this season and the record. Kind of because, like, basically, this season I was like, I never felt like I should have been the person who was close to resetting this record. It wasn't a goal. It wasn't on my radar, actually, ever. Like, I watched, like, Lindsay do that, get there, and I was like, that's happening for her. And I never, ever, I never thought that I would be that one. So even getting that close this season, I was almost like, didn't want it to happen. I almost wanted Ingemar to stay the record holder for all of eternity.
Why? Why did you not want to break the record?
I just like,
why did you want to diminish your own greatness?
Well, I don't know. I guess I just felt like if it happened, then, well, if it happened, everybody would start calling me the greatest of all time. And I don't see myself that way. And it's like I do struggle a little bit when the world puts a label that doesn't coincide with my label for myself. So I'm like,
how do you label yourself?
I don't even know. I don't, Mikhail Shiffrin. Like, I got a name. I don't know. The GOAT term is just like weird to me. I feel like there's more than one. And the term itself, it implies that there's only one, but there are more than one. Like people will debate LeBron James, Michael Jordan, like any of the others for the rest of eternity. And I think that's good. I think that's a beautiful thing about sports and skiing. I hope that people debate, you know, I'm part of the conversation, like that in and of itself is enough of a win for me. But I hope people debate it for the rest of all time. Like, I hope it's part of the conversation that two American women are at the top of a conversation for greatest of all time. Like, that's really cool. That's really cool for American ski racing, for our sport, for lifting the sport up in the U.S. And I don't want to take that title. Like, I want it to be the conversation because the conversation means people are talking about it and interested. And I just don't see myself taking that over. And I want Ingemar, like I want him to be the legend that never, like his name never ever disappears from the sport because he set the sport on the trajectory it is. So there's all these reasons why I like was sort of conflicted about that.
Yeah.
But in the end of the day, I just felt like, well, I'm not retiring. I'm doing well at this right now. If I keep skiing this way, I probably will break the record realistically.
Right.
Probably reset. I don't like the break term either.
Mm.
Reset the record.
Not in skiing. You don't want to say break in skiing.
No, it's a break. So realistically, it was going to happen. So I was like, whatever. It'll happen when it happens. And just like letting that go and just not caring about it, it was like the beginning of my career when I sort of was just interested in finding out what my potential was.
Right. Less pressure and seeing mm-hmm. what you're capable of every
yeah.
race. How old are you now? 28? Is that right? 28.
28. Yes, no spring chicken.
20. Dude, man, I just turned 40, so I'm trying to get back into college shape right now. I'm training like a machine.
I think you're doing okay.
You know, appreciate it. I'm curious. 28, the most accomplished ski racer in the world, or one of the most. What is your biggest fear moving forward in your career and also in your personal life outside of your career?
I don't really have, right now, I can't really think of a fear I have in my career. Maybe the only thing might be like injury.
Yeah.
Which has just always been, that's always there.
Yeah.
I definitely, like, I'm afraid, I do get afraid when I'm skiing. A lot of racers will say they don't have any fear, and I definitely do.
Yeah.
I think it's fine.
Crashing at 60 miles an hour is not fun.
It's not fun.
Even if you got a helmet on, it's not fun.
Not fun. And some would argue you can't have fear because you have to be willing to do that. And I'm like, well, I'm still afraid of doing that, but I'm going to do this anyway.
Yeah.
So I think there's all different ways you can approach that.
You don't let the fear hold you back.
But I definitely have it. And I do think it's important to admit when you have fear to yourself, because it's kind of like, it's like a relationship, and you're like, I gotta let you know that I'm feeling this right now, and then you still go for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, that's a different side of things. I think I'm probably gonna know a little bit more about what I'm afraid of once we get back into the race season. There's things pop up that I right now don't feel it, maybe feel a little bit on top of the world. This past season was amazing. I have nothing else that I expect to do, but I'm still training. I still feel like I'm doing great with my skiing, and I feel like people have figured out that expectations are sort of meaningless because I've exceeded them. I've failed miserably. The only thing I can really think of that would be a fear of mine is like how it goes in the upcoming Olympics. And mostly, if I were to not win any medals again, how would people react again? But I actually asked somebody, kind of an advisor and one of my sponsors recently. And I was like, this is a real thing. Like, I'm afraid to hype myself up going into this next Olympics or allow anybody else to hype me up because what if it happens again? And Beijing was a very, like, a standalone event. It was very unique with conditions. There were a lot of things there, like COVID. There were just a lot of things that built up prior to the games and during the games that it's like, it was fully against me in a way. But everybody has to deal with something that's against them. And some people made it anyway, and I didn't. So there's that. But I still feel like, I don't know, the cards could stack up that way again. And I could do my best, and it still might not work out. And I'm not afraid to try, but I have a little bit of a, like, what are people going to say then? Because now people still say, you know, like, record schmeckered, you don't have any gold medals. I'm like, we talked about this before.
Yeah.
I feel the need to defend it. I'm like, I actually do. I have Olympic gold medals, and I have many world championship gold medals. So, like, you don't know what you're talking about, but that's like.
So you have a fear of, when is the next Olympics?
2026.
So what are we, 3 years away?
3 years away.
Roughly 3 years away. Your fear is, In three years. What happens?
What might happen?
If I don't win a medal, or if I'm not a gold medalist again, what will people say about me?
Yeah.
That's
maybe a little bit.
How is that serving and supporting you in your life right now?
Just kind of exists. It's like, it doesn't have any impact on how I feel for this coming season. And this past season helped me a lot because I did win world champs medals. And it was sort of like, is it a big event thing? Is it a karma thing? Is it like, what is it about this? And there was a lot of kind of drama surrounding this past world championships. So it was just like,
can she do it? Yeah.
Yeah. And
and you did it.
Yeah. And it was like boiled down to how I skied. But I almost, like, the first race I did, the combined event, like, I was skiing great. And I skied off the course. I DNF'd again, 3 gates from the finish. And there was, like, there is a reason. We don't have to get into it now. But it was like, oh, my gosh, it's happening again. I had a great run. And then all I needed to do was make it past the last 2 gates. It's just.
But you were leading.
I was leading. It would have, like, for sure, if I made it to the finish, it would have been a win, but it wasn't because I didn't make it.
Was that a mental error in the moment?
No,
was it a...
It was actually, well, it was a little bit of a mental error, but it was actually, there was a section of the course that, it was literally the last 2 gates of the course that was prepared differently because of the way the sunlight struck the hill, but also because they moved the finish line down from the earlier run. So it was like soft snow for the last 2 gates of the course. And I saw that and I didn't adjust to it. So it was a little bit mental. For sure I could have done that differently and made it to the finish. But I was just like full gas and I didn't adjust.
I want to ask you a few final questions. I could do this conversation for hours with Michaela. This is inspiring. For me, I love talking to athletes who excel at the highest level. So it's really cool to hear your perspective and your thought process on performing, training, coaching, failure, success, all these things. How do you visualize for success? I know you mentioned early on that you don't really think about winning. You think about the next turn and really the whole course and the process of the course and getting through it. But do you dream and visualize about success the day before, the night before, months before a big event? How does that process work for you?
Yeah. It's kind of like a little bit multifaceted. Like I will visualize myself winning a race and like standing on the podium and the festivities after. I will visualize that, but that's more like that's more in the downtime when I'm daydreaming, when I'm training in the gym and I want to, like, I need one more set and I'm like, oh, this is killing me. And that's kind of like,
you think of that. Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of helps me a little bit in those situations. But then there's a visualization, like actual technical imagery of my skiing. And that I do almost every day. I think about skiing. I dream about skiing. And it's literally just dreaming about the way that I want to ski my turns that I think is the fastest way to do it. And when I'm actually, like right now is sort of the off season, it's a lot more training in the gym. So I haven't been on snow since the end of May. And so right now I'm maybe not thinking about it as much, but I'll be on snow again at the end of the month, at end of July. And as I get closer to that, I'm gonna pull up videos and watch my skiing and image and look at some of my races from last season, especially the races that I didn't win, to see, like, maybe watch the whoever won those races and see what they might have done better, and see what I can focus on for these upcoming camps as we get closer to the season.
Where's the snow in July?
I'm going to Mammoth.
Oh, it's like, there's snow there now?
Yeah, there is snow.
Holy
there.
Cow.
There's snow there now.
I was like, end of July, there's snow somewhere.
I know. Well, it's just mostly it's mostly because the West Coast got so much snow this winter.
Sure,
normally
sure.
It wouldn't be good at this time, but I think it's really good. But then otherwise, we'll go to Chile in September.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That's a good time.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
This is a question I ask everyone towards the end of my interviews. It's called the Three Truths. So you're 28, but let's imagine you get to live as long as you want to live in this world.
To
extend your life as long as you want to live. And you get to accomplish and experience all the things you want to experience in life, from skiing to whatever activities you do after skiing, to life, to family, whatever. Any dreams you have, you get to have them come true. But for whatever reason, you can't leave anything behind. No one can watch the races you've done or any content you've made. You've got a YouTube channel, which is really great. I want people to watch that behind the scenes. But all the things you've created, this interview is gone. Hypothetically, it's all gone. But you get to leave behind three lessons you would leave with the world from your life experience. Three things that you know to be true that feel good to you. What would be those three truths or lessons you would share with people?
I think that it's some, I'm not sure who said this, but failure isn't final. That would be one thing. And that it can actually be a lesson to help you succeed. Two would be everybody needs to compromise sometime. Compromise is part of life and love and relationships. I feel like never forget where you're from is just like your roots and your upbringing and the life that brought you to where you are. Because there's lessons in there and hidden lessons that you'll be learning for the rest of time. I feel like the first like 8 years of life probably taught you everything you need to know, but you just didn't know it then.
Those are beautiful. How can we be of support and service to you?
Oh, goodness.
You've got a massive following on social media, and I see on Instagram, I see you on the threads lately.
Threads. Jury's out on threads.
You got your YouTube channel, which is, you know, showing really vlogs behind the scenes of your life in between the slopes, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
Which we'll have all this linked up for people in the episode, but how can we be of support to you in this season of life?
Oh my goodness.
You're up for a couple ESPYs. This will come out after the ESPYs. So we're putting the intention out of good things to happen for you.
I mean, it's maybe less just for me, but like, ski racing is something I'm clearly passionate about. It's an incredible sport, but skiing in general. And there's so much about the snow sports that's so beautiful, incredible. The community, the family, the friendships you make along the way. And I always wish that I know so many incredible athletes and people who love skiing, love snowboarding, love snow sports. And I'm like, just say it, tell people, spread the word. Cause it is maybe a little bit selfish that I want people to do it because I want it to have a future. And there's a lot more to it than that. There's a lot more we didn't get into about climate and everything. But if it's a necessity for humans, we'll find a way to make it environmentally like forward-thinking, progressive, and friendly. And I want it to be something that people care about. And I feel like that comes with a spark from people talking about it.
So that's cool.
Mostly what you've already done, bringing me on the show and talking.
Yeah.
That's actually support enough. Of course, for me personally, but for skiing.
Go and ski and snowboard.
Just try it.
I'm a big snowboarder. I haven't done it in the last couple of years, but I want hearing about going to Mammoth makes me want to go now this
morning.
So if you ever do like a weekend camp, you know,
off-season, we should do it.
Let me know and invite me and my girlfriend. We'll come up and
snowboard. Oh, that would be so fun.
Spread the message of skiing to the world. So
I need to think about that.
Yeah, you should put on your own kind of like weekend adventure for people. So.
Oh, that would be great. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, I want to acknowledge you, Michaela, for your courage, because I think the courage to say that you aren't that confident in certain areas of your life, I think is really inspiring, because I think a lot of people look at you and think, she wins constantly by large gaps. And she's won all these medals and she's the most winningest, you know, skier of all time and all these things, and thinking you have this confidence in you, which I know you do, but I hear you saying that you don't in certain settings of life. And so I really acknowledge you for having the courage to talk about that and also giving language to what it means to be great at something you do. You can still be nervous, you can still be insecure, but having the courage and trying and doing it to the best of your ability is what it's really all about.
Yeah.
And so you've embodied that for really the last, I guess, 10, 12 years since you've been on the scene of skiing and really putting yourself out there. So I acknowledge you for your courage and your confidence, which you're very confident to me. So
thank you.
I acknowledge you for that, Michaela. My final question is, what is your definition of greatness?
I think greatness is the feeling that you get when you do or experience or watch something that gives you the shivers down your spine, the sort of inspiration, just the feeling like, I can't believe I'm part of this moment.
I hope today's episode inspired you on your journey towards greatness. Make sure to check out the show notes in the description for a rundown of today's show with all the important links. And if you want weekly exclusive bonus episodes with me, as well as ad-free listening experience, make sure to subscribe to our Greatness Plus channel on Apple Podcast. If you enjoyed this, please share it with a friend over on social media or text a friend. Leave us a review over on Apple Podcast and let me know what you learned over on our social media channels at Lewis House. I really love hearing the feedback from you, and it helps us continue to make the show better. And if you want more inspiration from our world-class guests and content to learn how to improve the quality of your life, then make sure to sign up for the Greatness Newsletter and get it delivered right to your inbox over at greatness.com/newsletter. And if no one has told you today, I want to remind you that you are loved, you are worthy, and you matter. And now it's time to go out there and do something great.